This is Standing Watch. And now, Evangelist Norbert Link.
Greetings, and welcome back to our Standing Watch program. Tremendous events are taking place as we speak in Syria, in Turkey, in Iran. And I mean, the list is ongoing. You can just add whatever country in the Middle East and in Africa you might want to. But today I'd like to just concentrate on those three countries. And I'd like to start with Syria. And I'd like to read to you from a Wall Street Journal article which was published June 14. And that is what it says. The Kremlin criticized the U.S. decision to arm Syrian opposition fighters and said Washington's evidence that the Syrian regime is using chemical weapons are unconvincing. Of course, that is no surprise that Russia is taking that position, but as I will show you, other countries are taking that position too. The article goes on to say that President Barack Obama on Thursday authorized the U.S. to arm fighters against the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's regime, reversing a policy of giving only non-lethal support to the country's opposition in the two-year-old civil war. And of course, then they were citing the evidence of chemical weapons that now prompted that reversal. UK Prime Minister David Cameron, it says, welcomed Washington's assessment of Syrian weapons use, but he didn't make any commitment that he would participate in it. And it says that UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Friday that he opposed the US decision to send arms. Of course, the Syrian government denied that they have used chemical weapons. Now, the German magazine Der Spiegel Online wrote on June 14 that Germany says it has no plans to deliver arms to the rebels. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the German finance minister and foreign ministry said it had no information of its own about the use of deadly poison gas by the regime in Damascus. The local wrote on June 15 that the FDP spokesman, which is of course a coalition party in the German government, said it is a mistake to send troops into Syria. He says the situation in Syria is completely unclear, and of course we're also talking about sending their weapons. No one knows who is going to end up with the weapons. They could be used against our partners. There is, after all, the danger that the conflict expands and spills over into other countries. Now, Deutsche Welle is pointing out on June 16 that the German government is against arming the rebels, fearing that this may lead to an escalation in the conflict. And of course they are saying that Iran, which we'll talk about in a moment, and Russia already sending in their weapons anyhow, and they won't stop doing it. But then they make this following interesting comment. They say, ultimately, however, the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Russia are all using the Syrian civil war to pursue their own ends. Syria has become an arena in which geopolitical power struggles are being played out, and it is the Syrian people who are paying the price. Now, I found the following article by The Independent, dated June 16, highly interesting, because it puts an additional light, and it sheds an additional light on what is really happening, and why this whole situation in the Middle East, including Syria, is beyond anybody's control. It says, Washington's decision to arm Syria's Sunni Muslim rebels has plunged America into the great Sunni-Shi'i conflict of the Islamic Middle East, entering a struggle that now dwarfs the Arab revolutions which overthrew dictatorships across the region. For the first time, all of America's friends, quote-unquote, in the region are Sunni Muslims, and all of its enemies are Shiites. Breaking all President Barack Obama's rules of disengagement, the U.S. is now fully engaged on the side of armed groups which include the most extreme Sunni Islamist movements in the Middle East. It goes on to say, in years to come, historians will ask how America, after its defeat in Iraq and its humiliating withdrawal from Afghanistan, scheduled for 2014, could have so aligned itself with one side in a titanic Islamic struggle stretching back to the 7th century death of the prophet Muhammad. The profound effects of this great schism between Sunnis, who believe that their father of Muhammad's wife was a new caliph of the Muslim world, and Shias, who regard his son-in-law Ali as a rightful successor, continue across the region to this day. Now, America's enemies, it says, include the Lebanese Hezbollah, the Shiite regime in Damascus, and of course, Iran. And Iraq, a largely Shiite nation, which America, quote-unquote, liberated from Saddam Hussein in hope of balancing the Shiite power of Iran, has, against all U.S. predictions, the article says, itself now largely fallen under Tehran's influence and power. Iraqi Shiites, as well as Hezbollah members, have both fought alongside Assad's forces. Then it says that Washington's excuse for its new Middle East adventure, that it must arm Assad's enemies because the Damascus regime has used sarin gas against them, convinces no one in the Middle East. Final proof of the use of gas by either side in Syria remains almost as nebulous as President George W. Bush's claim that Saddam's Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. In the Middle East, there is cynical disbelief at the American contention that it can distribute arms, almost certainly including anti-aircraft missiles, only to secular Sunni rebel forces in Syria, represented by the so-called Free Syria Army. The more powerful al-Nusra Front, allied to al-Qaeda, dominates the battlefield on the rebel side and has been blamed for atrocities, including the execution of Syrian government prisoners of war and the murder of a 14-year-old boy for blasphemy. They will be able to take new American weapons from their Free Syria Army comrades with little effort. And history is repeating itself and itself and itself. You see, the thing is, America has been doing this before. They have been helping certain ones whom they thought were their allies, and then they turned out to be their enemies. And the same mistake is being made again and again. Now, when it comes to Iran, everybody is now talking about the fact that we have now a moderate leader in Iran. Oh, they said the same about Egypt's president, and look what kind of a autocrat he has become. Reuters wrote on June 14 that all those who were running for presidency, none of them was challenging the Islamic Republic's 34-year-old system of clerical rule, and Hassan Rouhani, according to the Washington Post, dated June 15, who is the only cleric in the race, is of course supporting the Ayatollah, the Islamist dictator in Iran. And so the local talked about the fact that Mr. Westerwelle, the German foreign minister, is talking about a reformist having become the new president, but they are pointing out that, quite frankly, it's only by a matter of degree. And as I said, the same naive hope had been expressed regarding Mr. Morsi, and now he has become clearly a tool in the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Times of Israel asked the question on June 15 whether Mr. Rouhani, the new Iranian president, could actually change anything, even if he wanted to, and the conclusion was, he really can't. It says he has little leeway. An Iranian president largely serves as head of government for the supreme leader. And then they say one thing is very clear, the Iranian public wanted change. And yes, many in Iran want change. This says they were fearing the continuation of the status quo, or worse. But of course they didn't have much choice, because those candidates who were ultimately admitted to run, these were the ones who were all in support of the supreme leader. All the others were barred. They weren't even allowed to run. And so the article concludes in saying, his ability to deliver on that promise to change seems rather limited. I also want to point out that a strong connection is still there, and perhaps even now is growing stronger, between Syria and Iran. The Times of Israel wrote on June 16 that Syrian President Bashar Assad on Sunday congratulated Hassan Rouhani on his victory in Friday's Iranian presidential election, calling on his new counterpart to upgrade ties between the already close countries. And of course, Iran has been Assad's most ardent supporter. On Sunday, it goes on to say, Britain's independent newspaper reported that Tehran would be sending 4,000 troops to Syria to bolster Assad's forces, which are already augmented by fighters from the Lebanon-based terror group Hezbollah, which is backed by Iran. You see, my friends, it is important we understand what is happening in those countries because they are all of biblical proportions. For instance, we have written several booklets, one of which I like to offer to you now. It's a free booklet called Middle Eastern and African Nations and Prophecy. It talks about events in Syria, which is the biblical Aram. And it talks about Iran, the biblical Elam, which are of great prophetic importance. But then there's another country I'd like to briefly talk about, and that's Turkey and all the demonstrations which are going on in Turkey, and people are wondering why this is happening. Turkey, the biblical Edom or Esau, this booklet talks about them too. And some say, oh, it's just about some trees in a park. Well, that's not what it is. The Globe and Mail wrote on June 15 that for more than 200 years on this site, now known as the Gezi Park, adjacent to Istanbul's central Taksim Square, there stood Grand Ottoman-era military barracks, a testament to the power of the Ottoman Empire. Then came Kemal Atatürk, the father of the Republic, who wanted to Europeanize Turkey. In 1940, his successors had the barracks raised and the trees planted in their place. Mr. Erdogan, the most prominent Turkish leader since Mr. Atatürk, hopes to be in power in some capacity in 2023, the 100th anniversary of the founding of the modern state. And just as Mr. Atatürk ushered out the Islamic order that had dominated Turkey for 13 centuries, Mr. Erdogan and his Islamic-leaning Justice and Development Party have ushered it back in, making Islam once again a significant component of Turkish life. He wants the Ottoman barracks rebuilt to their former glory. Like a modern-day Peter the Great, he oversaw the design of Russia's capital in St. Petersburg. Now Mr. Erdogan is seeing to every detail of his urban masterpiece intended to Islamify parts of the city. That's where the demonstrations is all about, because many Turks don't like that idea that they have to become an Islamist country again, looking at the developments in, for instance, Egypt, in other parts of the world. Now we'll have to see how this is playing out, because ultimately Turkey will be an ally of Europe against Israel, as the Bible clearly prophesies. So again, we need to look into these things, and we are here to give you the information as they become available in the light of biblical prophecy. So thank you very much for listening. This is Norbert Link for the Standing Watch program.
Standing Watch is a presentation by the Church of the Eternal God, P.O. Box 270519, San Diego, California 92198. More information is also available at our website, eternalgod.org.